Welcome back to Radio EcoShock.
Let's get straight to Paul's update on the new Sea Shepherd actions, his good news for whales, and the lively Q&A with a wildly supportive audience in Vancouver, Canada, where the man started his 40-year voyage for the Earth's defenseless creatures. This is Paul Watson and Trish Dolman, recorded by Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock and Earthbeat Radio at the Projecting Change 2011 Film Festival, May 27th.
Well, I know everyone wants to hear Paul talk, but I just want to say a couple things because there's a couple more people I want to thank. Leah Mallon, who's in the audience, worked on the film, helping me develop it early on. And then I really need to thank my producer, Kevin Eastwood, who's not here tonight. He's actually working on another show for Animal Planet called Animal Hoarders, so he's running around the States. But he tirelessly worked on this film for the last 3.5 years, and it really did take a village of people to make it. So one of the things for me that about making the film, it's been a great honor to actually be able to interview some of the giants of the environmental movement. Obviously Paul, but Paul Spong, Rex Weiler, all these people who, you know, created incredible change starting in the 60s and 70s. And one of the greatest moments for me was being on the ship. And it really dawned on me when we were patrolling the Galapagos that the oceans are a vast place. And I think because humans are land mammals, we tend to think that people are following regulations. And it was like a light bulb going on, knowing that they're pretty lawless. And Paul is a unique individual in the world doing the work he does. So thanks, Paul.
Thanks. Just wanted to update. This year we went back down with 3 ships, and this was our most effective year ever. The Japanese whaling fleet took only 15% of their quota, and they left a month and a half earlier than expected, and I don't think they're going to come back. But if they do, we'll be back there waiting for them. Meanwhile, the Steve Irwin is in southern France. We replaced the Adigil with a new vessel, which we named Gojira, which means Godzilla. Godzilla, actually, Gojira means in Japanese gorilla whale, so we thought it was quite appropriate. I just couldn't resist the headlines of Godzilla chases whaling fleet out of Antarctica. You know, in Japan, of course, Gojira in Japan has a completely different meaning. But unfortunately, the only thing more frightening than Godzilla is Godzilla's lawyers. And so we were told we couldn't use the name, but that's okay. It fulfilled its function. And then 2 days ago, we just renamed the vessel, so it's now the Brigitte Bardot, and gave us a terrific media coverage in France there 2 days ago. So the Brigitte Bardot is with the Steve Irwin in Toulon, and in a couple of days, we'll be leaving to go to the coast of Libya. And the reason being is that the poachers are going to take advantage of the war zone, and the EU has assured us that any fishing vessel we find in that zone, we can cut their nets and free the fish, that any fishing vessel is illegal. Now, last year we cut the nets and released 800 tuna, and when people are concerned about our safety this year, it's much safer this year than it was last year. First of all, no Libyan Air Force. Second of all, no Libyan Navy. We just have to worry about friendly fire from NATO, but we'll keep them advised as to where we are. And right after that, we will be taking the vessels to the International Whaling Commission meeting this year, which is in July, and it's being held in Jersey, in the Isle of Jersey. And then from there, we'll be going up to the Danish Faroe Islands to interfere with the killing of pilot whales there. Also, we've had a crew in Japan for the last 6 months, and they succeeded in cutting the dolphin kill quota by half. 800 dolphins were killed this year, but 800 were killed, but every year it's usually about 1,600 to 1,800. So, you know, but that was a six-month crew on the ground for 6 months. And, in fact, we almost lost them because on March, I think, the 12th, our crew were in, of all the days to go to the northern part of the island to check out dolphin killing, they were in Iwate Prefecture when our crew leader noticed the water being sucked out of the harbor, and they got up on top of a hill just in time, and 9 minutes later, the tsunami wiped out that entire town. And we lost them for about 40 hours, but in true Sea Shepherd fashion, the next morning they commandeered a Japanese fire truck and drove their way down the hill. Unfortunately, Japan has... It treats us really as like, it's almost an honor, really. They treat us like we're a foreign nation that they're at war with. And they've been putting a lot of pressure on it. I'm now officially, by the way, on the Interpol blue list. What that means is I'm not wanted for anything, but people are instructed to give me a hard time when I cross borders. And I first learned about this when I drove from here down to Washington. And I happen to hold both passports, so they can't keep me out of the U.S., can't keep me out of Canada, much of the frustration in both countries. But as I drove down across the border, I just calmly handed my passport over, not suspecting anything, and suddenly the officer said, "Put your hand on the wheel now, sir." And all of a sudden, sirens started going off, and my hands are on the wheel, and I noticed that there was guys behind concrete blocks with guns aimed at me. And they said, "Throw out your keys." "Well, I can't throw out my keys with my hands on the wheel." So then he got me out of the car, handcuffed me, threw me in, and 10 minutes later I was on my way because apparently there's no warrant for my arrest. But what I found out is that I'm on the document as armed and dangerous eco-terrorist. Now, what we've managed to do, I've managed to make this work for me now. So that just yesterday, coming into Chicago, we call ahead now and everything gets cleared. But I'm met at the airport by the Homeland Security guys, who I know now and very friendly. And they escort me right to the front of the line and out the door. I'm out there before everybody else. So I'm getting the VIP, I call it the blue list VIP treatment. And so very thankful to Japan for that. But anyway... hopefully we won't have to go back. And we're actually making other progress. Right after that, I was invited by the president to Palau to come visit him in March. And we were requested if we could help them. And so we said, yeah, we'll provide our vessel, the Bob Barker. We'll take it and send it to Palau to police their waters. Because all of these island nations are getting just completely plundered by illegal fishing operations. There's more illegal fishing in the world now than there is legal fishing. And so we agreed and we signed a contract with the Palau government to officially police their waters. Well, Japan found out about that. They sent a delegation. Despite the earthquake and the tsunami, they still sent a delegation down there to demand that Palau not work with us. And, of course, the president didn't give in on this. But then they said, well, we'll give you a patrol boat and the money to run it. And so the president called me. I said, well, take the patrol boat and take the money. That's great. You know, so which he did, and now we're going to Nauru and the Cook Islands and the Marshall Islands. I think we can get Japan to provide patrol boats to everybody this way. So thank you. It would be very pleased to answer any questions anybody has.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock and Earthbeat. You've just heard Captain Paul Watson of the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society and director Trish Dolman following the premiere of the new film Eco Pirate, The Story of Paul Watson. Let's go straight to the question and answer period in Vancouver.
All right, questions right here.
Thank you for your remarkable work. I wonder how we can use some of the same techniques you've used for marine mammals to protect all species in global warming. What kinds of exciting, important, revolutionary techniques do you think we can use there?
I think really what you need to concentrate on is that the solution to all these problems lies in the passion, the courage, and the imagination of individuals, and not to depend on governments. They never solve problems, they cause problems, but to depend upon that kind of passion. And just imagination is really the way to find out about it, or to find these solutions. When people say that, it's so overwhelming, I mean, what can we do? I mean, it's impossible. Well, I think that the answer is always the impossible one. You just have to be able to visualize that answer. For instance, in 1972, the very idea that Nelson Mandela would be president of South Africa was unthinkable, unimaginable, and impossible, yet it happened. So I think we can solve these problems, and that's why I take an optimistic outlook on this.
Next question.
In the film, you said there was a question of your retiring. What's your comment on that?
Well, first of all, I've never, ever believed in retirement. My grandfather, my mother's father, died at 96, and he was murdered. So he was working till the day he died, he still managed to wound the guy enough that he was arrested. So I don't believe in retirement, and I don't intend to retire. In fact, I'm quite enjoying what I'm doing. And I don't know, people seem to think I'm getting old or something. That question keeps coming up all the time. I'm not that old. I'm the youngest founding member of Greenpeace. Well, in December I turned 60. Woo!
Questions, he won't retire. Having been on the ships, I don't think Paul will ever retire.
In the year 2000, when the tsunami hit Southeast Asia, the Canadian government financed the rebuilding of fish boats in Sri Lanka. And the Canadian press, when the tsunami hit Japan a couple of months ago, it was considered to be unethical to raise the issue that this was some kind of karma that was due to them. Maybe you'd like to comment on that.
Oh, no, the earthquake and the tsunami in Japan were not karma. It's a question of geography and geology. And so I actually get very upset when people say the Japanese deserve this. It's not the Japanese people. It's just like, you know, you and I are not responsible for the seal hunt as Canadians, just as the average Japanese is not responsible for the killing of whales and the killing of dolphins. It's a certain segment of these societies. And ultimately, it falls on the government. In this country, the single most corrupt and probably ridiculous bureaucracy in this country is the Department of Fisheries and Oceans. They are totally incompetent. They destroyed the cod fishery on the East Coast, and they will wipe out the salmon on the West Coast. These people are environmental criminals, and you know they're always saying, oh, well, we have the best scientists in the world. You know, they have the best biostitutes in the world. These are people who come up with the scientific justifications for their political policies. And that, you know, and they're wrong. They've been wrong consistently. Well, you know, I hate to say this. As long as this country keeps voting for like Stephen Harper, then it's all going to go down the tube.
Oh, here we go. It's getting fired up.
Hi, Paul. I would like to just preface this real fast. I ran for the Pirate Party Canada in Vancouver Centre during this last election. I was asked by a reporter, is there somebody who you'd want to be? And I said, well, I don't want to be anybody. I want to be Travis McCrae, but I would like to have Paul Watson say one day, you know that Travis McCrae is a pretty good guy. Peter just told me that I'm probably going to be the communications officer on one of your ships. I have no problem dying in your name, or you know, in the name of not in your name, but in the name of the environment under your command.
You ran for Vancouver Centre?
Yes, I did.
You and I have that in common. I ran for MP for Vancouver Centre. We both lost.
So, now, my real question is, I've noticed that, especially with a lot of the young people, we don't have balls anymore. I mean, I think that's it. I mean, people are not standing up and going out and standing up for what they believe in as much as they used to. At least, you know, I look at the videos of the 60s and everybody going out. Okay, what is your opinion on that?
I disagree completely. I mean, if it wasn't for the passion and the courage of the individuals that crew my ships, we wouldn't be able to do anything. And I've got 2,000 crew applications right now, more than we've ever had. And the hardest part of my job on that is saying no to so many people. You know, we don't want to, but we just don't have the room. This last campaign to Antarctica was 88 crew from 23 different nations on 3 different ships. And these are the people who make our organization effective. And I'm seeing more and more young people getting involved, more so, I would say, than in the 70s or the 80s. So I completely take a different view on that, really. I think that there's much more involvement, and I'm very optimistic about that.
Can I just add to that, too? I think it's the world's changed. I mean, people used to take to the streets perhaps more visibly than people do now, and that was more effective then, and the world has changed and become much more sophisticated. So now I think there's far more room for people and young people to use the internet, to use YouTube, to use all these things that didn't exist 30 years ago to spread a social message. And I think there's lots of people doing that that are inspired by people like Paul and Sea Shepherd. So it's just different. The playing field is different.
One of the things that, you know, we're constantly criticized because of the way we do things and everything. But the reality of it is that in the entire history of our organization, we've never injured anybody. We've never had anybody seriously injured. We've never actually committed a felony or been convicted of a felony crime. You know, 2 years ago, I was invited to give a lecture to the FBI Academy in Quantico, of all things, and they actually paid me to come lecture the FBI. And one of the FBI agents said, well, you know, Sea Shepherd's walking a pretty damn fine line when it comes to the law. And I said, well, who cares how fine it is as long as you don't cross the line. So they couldn't disagree with that logic. But one of them said, well, you know, people come into Sea Shepherd and they learn how to be eco-terrorists. You know, there's some of your ex-crew members have gone on to be eco-terrorists, whatever that is. I don't think they're working for British Petroleum, but anyway, the... But I said, so how am I responsible for what people do when they leave Sea Shepherd? You train them, you're responsible. I said, okay, I have three names for you. Lee Harvey Oswald, Timothy McVeigh, and Osama bin Laden. You train them, you're responsible. Actually, three of them joined. I don't know if that's to keep tabs on us or not.
Hi, Paul.
Hi.
Love you.
Thanks.
Do you still live in Gig Harbor?
Never did live in Gig Harbor.
Oh, Friday Harbor.
Friday Harbor.
Are you still there?
About 2 weeks a year.
Well, that's true. Well, you're our national treasure, despite DFO. Where do we stand on the seal hunt, or the Sea Shepherd stance on the seal hunt? It's a real black mark on our country.
The Canadian seal hunt, for all intents and purposes, is over. There's no market. Europe has banned the seal pelts, are banned. China just banned seal pelts. But Canada just can't let it go. So this idiot who runs DFO, Gail Shea. She just set the quota at 460,000, the highest quota in the history of the seal hunt. Absolutely ridiculous. What was that all about? Thumbing their nose at Europe. It's a bunch of kindergarten guys in there just fighting with each other. It's ridiculous. But how many seals are going to be killed this year? Maybe 50, 60,000, which is a lot, but still a lot less the quota because there's no money in it. We have effectively destroyed the market, and that is the only language anybody understands, is profit and loss. Now, the one thing, the government wants us to go back in there, but we're not doing it, because they know that if we go back in there, it will just rile up everybody and all this national patriotism and everything, and let's go kill a seal in order to piss off Sea Shepherd. We're not going to do it. The seal hunt is dying, and we're going to let it die. Now we're going to turn our attentions to trying to stop the slaughter of seals in Namibia. So that's what we'll be doing for now. But I think that within a couple of years, it'll die out a natural death. After, you know, and they will no longer have seal stew in the parliament buildings, and Harper won't be walking around with a silly little sealskin briefcase and everything. You know, and you don't have the governor general eating raw seal hearts on television like, you know, some sort of barbarian princess. I mean, the thing is getting... You know, Canada's just been really crazy on this thing, but I think we'll grow up.
I just want to add one thing to that. I cut about an hour out of the film that was all about the seal hunt, because at one time it was much, much longer. But two things. Elizabeth May said that she felt that the seal hunt was the biggest distraction away from the decimation of the cod fishery, and that's why the Canadian government pursues it, is to keep both fisher people and activists focused on the seal hunt and not thinking about or focusing their attention on the decimation of one of the greatest fish species on the planet, which I thought was very astute. And then I was interviewing a guy who's in charge of PR for the DFO about the seal hunt. And when I asked him, I said, well, don't you see that the role of activists, because they're you know, vociferously against people like Paul or anyone who opposes a seal hunt, and in fact kind of hate them. And I said, well, don't you see that the social function of an activist is to create change, to create social change, and that activists have actually caused you to change your approach to the seal hunt and try to make it more humane. Otherwise, you never would have cared, because now they run around saying, well, it's humane, it's humane. And the guy turned to me, he goes, you know, I never actually thought of that way. And that, to me, was one of the reasons why I wanted to make this film, is I think people have forgotten the importance of and the social function of activists like Paul Watson. So,
one conversation that we had out on the ice with the Coast Guard actually was very funny. I said to the Coast Guard, what are you doing out here? And he says, well, we're protecting the fishermen from people like you, sir. I said, well, who's protecting the seals? And the guy came back and he said, I understand that's your job, sir. Thank you.
That was Paul Watson, founder and captain of the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, with Trish Dolman, writer and director of the new film Eco Pirate, The Story of Paul Watson. This full-length movie will be released in July. Find links in my blog at ecoshock.info or at screensiren.ca. This was, hands down, the best green documentary I've seen this year. The Arctic footage and shipboard life alone was stunning. Writer Dolman did not create a fan film. She went to Watson's critics, and there are many, from the Japanese ambassador through Canadian officials, even to wives and a daughter left behind on shore. The story of early Greenpeace is woven in, with a careful look at nonviolence versus direct action. There is love and danger when ships collide in the open seas, and you are there as part of the crew. I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock and Earthbeat. I recorded this event at the Projecting Change 2011 Film Festival in Vancouver, Canada, on May 27th. And find out more about Paul Watson at seashepherd.org. If you are just tuning in, you'll get double time today. This is Radio EcoShock and Earthbeat. Host Daphne Wysham is taking a break while she and her valiant crew reorganize the program. I'm Alex Smith, filling in. Even while off-duty, Daphne couldn't help hauling out her recorder and her reporter's instincts when she drove through the demolished town of Glade Springs, Virginia last week. It was a month after one of the hundreds of killer tornadoes that swept through America from Oklahoma all the way north to the Canadian border. If you get hit by climate disruption, can you expect the government to help? Let's see who really shows up. With this on-the-spot recording of just one grandmother, Rita Muncy, who thought her family was safe. Here's Daphne Wysham reporting from Virginia.
My name is Daphne.
I'm Rita Muncy. We're in Glade Springs, Virginia.
Glade Springs, Virginia. Now, we're sitting outside of your house here next to Highway 81. Can you tell me how long ago did this tornado hit?
April 28th. It's been 4 weeks now.
And what is the structural damage to your house?
Our roof has to be totally replaced, our siding, our gutters, 13 windows, and inside our ceilings are coming down, our walls are cracked.
Tell us what it was like when the tornado actually struck.
It's the worst thing I've ever seen or heard or lived through my whole life.
What was it like?
It was a loud noise. We barely made it to the basement in time with three small children. And we got there about 20 seconds to spare, and I could hear everything thumping and that loud sound like a whistle. I could hear it, and I told my son, I said, there goes the house, boys. And I just knew when we came out that it would be gone. But
now,
it's standing.
Is this your granddaughter here?
Yes, this is our youngest one. This is Evelyn.
And she's about
two. Yep.
So, your neighbor's house is completely destroyed. The roof is completely off of it. Trees are cut in half. Devastation all around. How many homes in this neighborhood have been destroyed? Do you know?
About 95% of our homes are destroyed or gone.
95%?
Yes.
What did your local government do when this happened?
Well, we applied for our FEMA aid, and we were assured by our governor, help is coming. But we were denied our FEMA aid.
What was the rationale for denying the FEMA aid?
They said there was not enough structural damage.
To your house in particular or to everybody's house around here?
To everyone. Glade Springs did not have enough structural damage for FEMA assistance.
And what has been the response of local elected officials to that?
Oh, they say that we are appealing it. We have had protests in front of Congressman Griffith's office. He came out and gave us a big old pep talk that it was being appealed and that he was with us, but that's as far as it's gone.
Have you ever seen weather like this here before?
Never. In fact, I always told my kids we were safe here because we had the mountains to protect us. And now we just don't have that protection, I guess.
So How are you managing here? I mean, you got, I just drove through a rainstorm, and very heavy rainstorm at that. How are you managing here in this house?
Well, like I said, we've got a roof tarped. Every time it rains, more water comes in on our ceilings. We spent an hour in the basement yesterday because they said there was more tornado warnings. And then another day this week, we were an hour in the basement. We're petrified.
Do you own this house?
Us and the mortgage company.
So what are your plans in terms of insurance?
Well, our insurance guy is trying to give us about a third of what we need to put our house back together. And we're fighting them. That's all we know to do is just keep fighting.
So your hope is that if you get a third of your insurance, a third of the value of your home from your insurance, and the rest, you're hoping will come from FEMA? Is that your hope?
We're praying that FEMA will. But let me tell you, the volunteers that have came through here, I guess FEMA's turned their back on us, so everybody in our community has really pitched in to come and help. There's volunteers, carpenters that have come around, and they keep saying that as soon as you find out what your insurance is going to do, call us, let us know. We will come and work for free. Anything we can do to help you get your house back. So, you know, there's seven people living here, and we don't need their ceiling falling in on our grandbabies.
Are these carpenters that are volunteering to come and help, are they from the local community?
Yes, a lot of them are. A lot of them are from, like, Elizabethton, Blountville, about an hour away, Gate City, the churches, Red Cross, the United Way. Mm-hmm. They have came, got volunteers from Eastman yesterday, and they cut my next-door neighbor's stubs of trees down and helped pick up some of the garbage in her yard. Mm-hmm. They've just been wonderful.
So what's your message then to FEMA and to the federal government in response to what you're living through?
Okay, I am living through one of my worst nightmares of my whole life. And we pay our taxes every single year, as we're supposed to. Our government sends billions of dollars to foreign countries. I want FEMA to come in here and take care of us here at home, as it should be.
Any thought on what you're going to do if they don't?
You know what? We just keep praying every day. If FEMA doesn't help, I'm just the generosity of the local people. That's about all we can do. Just pray.
Well, thanks for talking with us today. Tell me your name one more time.
I'm Rita Muncy.
Thanks for talking with us today, Rita Muncy.
Thank you.
That was Daphne Wisham, longtime host of Earthbeat Radio from the blown downtown of Glade Springs, Virginia, in late May 2011. For me, that clip is much more than disaster entertainment. It contains almost everything I've tried to communicate on this show, except maybe Rita Muncy says it better, being there in the moment, with children to shelter, poor, in the middle of such a rich country. My conclusion? If the unstable climate finds you, don't expect government help. Your local community volunteers are the folks who really show up. Maybe it's time to join the transition movement, form a community support group near you, and build those relationships that will help you and your family through the hardest of times. The websites are earthbeatradio.org and ecoshock.org. I'm Alex Smith. We live in challenging times, don't we? Join us next week. Thank you for using your ears, mind, and heart.